chapter 14, if you would, please. Leviticus chapter 14. We looked at the last time, we looked at the laws and lessons of leprosy from Leviticus chapter 13. And today, we're going to look at this thought from Leviticus chapter 14, restoration is possible. Restoration is possible, or the cleansing of the leper. Now, leprosy is not all that pleasant of a topic, and all the minutiae, there's 59 verses in Leviticus chapter 13, and all the minutiae of this and that and this and that is not always the most interesting thing. You know, there's times when we, you know, if you're honest, you get there in your Bible reading, and you're like, oh. You kind of speed read or don't always pay close attention. But leprosy was not always a direct judgment of God for sin. Just because someone was a leper doesn't mean that they had sinned and been punished. But leprosy does teach lessons, give us pictures of sin. The leper was contaminated. He was isolated. He was to be kept outside the camp. He was to let everybody know that he was unclean. He was either a separate section in the temple or the synagogue or not allowed to be there at all. Leprosy as a disease stinks. There was a foul odor as the flesh would rot and the sore would be there and so forth. It separates from God. It starts small and continues to grow and contaminate everything else. The slow growth of leprosy pictures some certain kinds of sin, and it brings suffering and ultimately a sad end. Those are tremendous pictures of the effects of sin. That's a rather discouraging picture if we simply stop there. But Leviticus chapter 14 tells that it is possible that a leper could be cleansed. By application then, the despair that comes from sin, there is a possibility of cleansing and forgiveness from sin as well. Leviticus 14 begins out verse 1, "The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, This shall be the law of the leper in the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought unto the priest." All right? So we're looking at restoration is possible, or the cleansing of the leper. You notice the end of verse 2, he was not brought to the physician. Okay? Even as we observed in chapter 13, when leprosy was pronounced officially, all right, yes, this is leprosy, he was brought to the priest and not the physician. There was no known medical cure at this time for this condition of leprosy. And this was part of the priest's responsibilities. And really, if a leper was cleansed, it was by the direct hand of God, a miraculous cure. And he again was to come to the priest. Verse 3, "The priest shall go forth out of the camp, and the priest shall look, and behold, the plague of leprosy be healed in the leper. Then shall the priest command to take for him that is to be cleansed two birds, alive and clean, and cedar wood, and scarlet, and hyssop. The priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel over running water. As for the living bird, he shall take it, and the cedar wood, and the scarlet, and the hyssop, shall dip them in the living bird, and the blood of the bird that was killed over running water. He shall sprinkle upon him that is to be cleansed from the leprosy seven times, and shall pronounce him clean, and shall let the living bird loose into the open field. He that is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes, and shave off all his hair, and wash himself in water, that he may be clean, and after that he shall come into the camp and tarry abroad out of his tent 7 days. But it shall be on the seventh day, he shall shave all his hair off of his head, his beard and his eyebrows, even all his hair he shall shave off. He shall wash his clothes, he shall wash his flesh in water, and he shall be clean. On the eighth day he shall take two he lambs without blemish, and one ewe lamb of the first year without blemish, 3/10 deal of fine flour for a meat offering mingled with oil, and 1 log of oil. The priest that maketh him clean shall present the man that is to be made clean in those things before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And the priest shall take one he lamb and offer him for a trespass offering and the log of oil and wave them for a wave offering before the Lord. And he shall slay the lamb in the place where he shall kill the sin offering and the burnt offering in the holy place. For as the sin offering is the priest, so is the trespass offering, it is most holy. And the priest shall take some of the blood of the trespass offering, and the priest shall put it upon the tip of the right ear of him that is to be cleansed, upon the thumb of his right hand, and upon the great toe of his right foot. And the priest shall take some of the log of oil and pour it into the palm of his own left hand, And the priest shall dip his right finger in the oil that is in his left hand, and shall sprinkle the oil with his finger 7 times before the Lord. And the rest of the oil that is in his hand shall the priest put on the tip of the right ear of him that is to be cleansed, and upon the thumb of his right hand, and upon the great toe of his right foot, upon the blood of the trespass offering. And the remnant of the oil that is in the priest's hand he shall pour upon the head of him that is to be cleansed. And the priest shall make an atonement for him before the Lord. And the priest shall offer the sin offering, and make an atonement for him that is to be cleansed from his uncleanness. And afterward he shall kill the burnt offering. And the priest shall offer the burnt offering and the meat offering upon the altar. And the priest shall make an atonement for him, and he shall be clean. And if he be poor and cannot get so much, then he shall take one lamb for a trespass offering to be waved, to make atonement for him, and 1/10 deal of fine flour mingled with oil for a meat offering and a log of oil, and 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons, such as he is able to get. The one shall be a sin offering, and the other a burnt offering. And then he repeats the same process with the blood and the oil and so forth, using the birds. Okay? The cleansing, restoration was possible. The priest would have to, that would pronounce a man unclean as a leper, would also have to be the one to pronounce him clean if he'd been healed. You remember that there were 10 lepers in the New Testament, you know, that came to Jesus and said, "Can you heal us?" Jesus healed them and said, "Go your way, show yourself to the priest, and offer for a sacrifice that which Moses commanded." This is exactly what he was referring to. And you remember, out of those 10, how many came back to say thank you? Just the one, right? And boy, there's the tremendous application there as well. But what Jesus was referring to was this procedure here that is outlined in detail in Leviticus chapter 14. A very interesting note here in verse number 3. Could the leper go to the priest? Not any further than the edge of the camp, right? So for all practical purposes, the leper could not go and knock on the door of the priest and say, "Hey, I need you to check me out." Okay? Revelation chapter 21, speaking of the new heaven, of course, says, "And there shall in no wise enter into it, the new Jerusalem, anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they that are written in the Lamb's book of life." God's dwelling place, God's heaven, is holy. Nothing that defiles would be allowed to enter into His dwelling place. Okay? It's pictured for us here when the leper who is defiled by this condition of leprosy is not allowed to enter into the camp, the dwelling place of the people of God. The priest, verse 3, had to go forth out of the camp to meet him. Now, this wasn't the high priest. It was any of the priests were eligible to do this. But it does remind us of some things. John 3:16 says, "God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son." God sent His Son to the world. Were we looking for Him? Not necessarily. Jesus said, "The Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which was lost." Christ, Hebrews 13, verses 11, 12, and 13 tell us that Christ was crucified without the camp to bear our reproach, to let us go out without the camp and identify with Him. But the point is that just as Christ came to meet us when we could not go to Him, the priest was to go and meet this leper who was not permitted to enter the camp because of a sinful condition. It's a neat little picture here. The priest had to go out and meet the leper. Now, put yourself in the position of the priest for just a moment. So the leper has to get a messenger, okay, and say, "Hey, I need you to go get me a priest. I need him to check me out." So he comes in, you know, the messenger comes to the room there where the priests are and says, "Gentlemen, there's a leper outside the camp that needs to be checked out. He believes he's clean and he wants you to check him out." Do you see the priests jumping up and down? "Ooh, let me go, let me go." Or is it more of a, "I took the last one, it's your turn." Or, "I've got the seniority, you're the junior, you go." You know, I can't imagine that this was one of the most favorite jobs that the priest had. There's responsibilities in life. Some of them we enjoy more, some of them we enjoy less. But this had to be done. You know how the Jews added to the law of God. They kept adding regulations. By the time it got down to the time of Christ, when they had all the writings that were added to it, I believe it was Edersheim said that the rabbis had made it so that it couldn't be early in the morning, like first light. It couldn't be late in the evening at dusk. But it couldn't be midday either, where the glaring sun would blind it and they wouldn't be able to tell. So it's like they had a window from 9 to 11 or from, you know, 2 to 4. There were certain times a day that they could, it was just, you know, they added all of the priest had to have good eyesight. He couldn't be, you know, someone whose eyes were failing and all kinds of crazy laws. But all God said was the priest had to go outside the camp and meet him, all right? So whether he was like, hey, I'm bored, I've been sitting here with nothing to do, or whether he drew the short straw, whatever the case, the priest had to go outside the camp and meet the leper and examine him. We won't take the time to review all of chapter 13, but there were things to look for in the skin, things to look for in the hair, in the sore. There were particular things that they were to look for. Now, anyone who touched the leper became unclean. But the priest, in the course of his official examination, was not considered unclean or contaminated if he touched him and was checking him out. But he had to go and do an evaluation. Is he clean? Is it healed? Is everything good to go? And the opportunity here is presented that the leper could be cleansed. You know, we have a message of hope too, do we not? That those that are defiled with sin, we have the opportunity to be cleansed. We have the opportunity to be reconciled to God. And he was able to come, and the priest was able to look at him and say, yes, you're cleansed. The priest had tremendous power. He was to be a man of integrity. Now, later on, another one of the rules that they added was that the priest could not examine a leper who was of his own family. I wonder why that rule came in. Somebody did a brother-in-law deal, right? And, you know, helped out his... He declared him to be clean when he wasn't. You know, I've got a friend or a relative that's a priest. You know, he'll hook me up so I don't have to stay outside the camp anymore. But the priest was to be a man of integrity. He was to give an honest evaluation. But his word went. If the priest said no, guess where that leper was going? Back to the leper camp. He was staying outside. The priest did have a tremendous amount of power, but it was to be used at God's command, not for his own discretion. But notice here, there's multiple steps in this cleansing process. Verse 4, they are to take two birds alive and clean, okay? Clean doesn't simply mean no dirt. This would have been on the list of clean animals, okay? Cedar wood and scarlet and hyssop. Now, there's a lot of ink that's been spilled to speculate as to what those things mean, and there's different ideas. The cedar, according to some things I read, cedar wood has a little bit of an antiseptic property to it sometimes. It definitely has a nice smell to it. You know, maybe you don't like it, but you know, if you like those kinds of things, cedar has a nice odor. And when you compare the foul odor of the sores of leprosy, cedar, by comparison, had a pleasant odor. Okay? Had the cedar wood, scarlet, the color of blood, and hyssop. It was a plant, okay? Now, what particular kind of hyssop was it? I'll let you figure that out, okay? The scholars like to debate, is it this or that or this or that? You know, they were to take hyssop. You know, Leviticus 14 here and Numbers chapter 19 both talk about hyssop being involved in this process of cleansing and purification. It's interesting when you get over to Psalm 51, David's psalm of repentance. He says, you know, give me a clean heart, O God. But in verse number 7, he says, purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. He was begging for this. I mean, in the Jews' mind, hyssop, whatever that plant was directly connected with the process of being cleansed and being restored. And he's saying, David may well have been saying he felt like an outcast from God, like the leper outside the camp. But nonetheless, he said, purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. It's a reference to these procedures here. But they were to take cedar wood, scarlet, and hyssop. The priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel over running water. Okay? Now, running water would have been the purest, cleanest water available. It was a stream or a river or a spring, as opposed to a pond that can stagnate. We were driving a couple weeks ago and went past through an area with several farm ponds. And boy, they get that green scum on the top of them. My boys don't see that a whole lot. And they're like, ooh, what's that stuff? But it was not to be stagnant. It was to be fresh water. Now, my understanding of this is that the water was to be taken from running water. I don't necessarily think that they had to go and hold the bird over the creek or the river, directly over the running water while it was killed, but rather it was running water that was to be used. Okay, that's the way I understand it. Maybe they had to go take him and kill him over the spring. But basically, they were to have running water, clean, pure. And they were to take one of the birds and kill it in an earthen vessel over running water. So they were to take a pottery-type vessel, an earthen vessel, not a metal bowl or anything. And they're to take the running water and put it in the bowl. And they're to take the blood of the bird. Now, compared to a sheep or a goat or a cow, anything like that, a bird is going to have a relatively small amount of blood. Okay? And they were to sprinkle several times and stuff like that. So quite possibly the water was to, give a little more liquid. It may just be that the running water symbolizes being clean, and the blood is necessary for cleansing as well. But they were to hold this pottery bowl and take that bird and kill it and drain the blood into the water. Okay? Now, you might be thinking, ugh, gross. Hey, to this leper, this was music to his ears, to borrow an expression. This was a pleasant thing because this was the process by which he could be restored. And verse 6, he shall take the living bird and the cedar and the scarlet, and he shall dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed. Now, some of the writers think that they would take the scarlet and tie the hyssop and the cedar temporarily to the bird, so you got all one unit. Okay? I'm picturing this. Okay? You got a live bird. You better have a big hand, a strong hand. I don't know what they did to keep him from pecking him or whatever, But this living bird has to be released, so you can't just, decapitate it or incapacitate it. But one way you could look at this is they would take the bird and dip it in there and use the bird to sprinkle. Either way, whether they actually sprinkle with the bird or whether the priest would take the cedar wood and the hyssop and that scarlet tied around it, all of that was dipped in the blood and water, and that was sprinkled on this leper. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So he's going to be splattered with blood and water. Okay? The water, the running water, pure, cleansing. The blood, without shedding of blood, there's no remission. Blood was necessary for the cleansing. And after he sprinkled 7 times, the priest was to pronounce him clean. Into verse 7, he shall let the living bird loose into the open field. This, for some of you, might be ringing some bells. I hope it is. This is a parallel to the process on the Day of Atonement where the scapegoat was allowed to go. Okay? Now, it's not a direct parallel in the sense, on the Day of Atonement, there were 2 goats, one of them was killed, one of them was let go, but the priest would put his hands on the head of that goat and confess all the sins of the people and by a picture transfer the weight of those sins onto the head of the goat. The goat was then carrying, and then that goat was to be let out into the wilderness far enough away they'd never see it again, and it was let go, picturing that when Christ, the perfect sacrifice, would come. Remember John the Baptist said, "Behold the Lamb of God which taketh away the sin of the world." That's the scapegoat pictured the sins being taken away. Okay? Well, here you got, there's some parallels here, but the living bird was to be, the end of verse 7, let the living bird loose into the open field. Okay? Now, the living bird's been dipped in the blood and water as well. So in a picture, we could say it's this way. The living bird, he's been dipped in the blood and water, just like the leper has the blood and water sprinkled on him. He's let loose to, in a sense, he's free to rejoin his friends or family or rejoin the other birds. He's not in captivity anymore. He is, you know, that blood, water, that stigma has been carried away. The picture for the leper was this. His stigma, his uncleanness has been carried away. Just as the bird was free to rejoin the animals of the field instead of being confined to captivity, the leper is on his way to being able to rejoin the people of God and to rejoin his family and no longer be separated or confined to the leper's camp. And so you got the one bird was killed, the other bird was let go. Verse 8, he that is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, and wash himself in water, that he may be clean. And after that he shall come into the camp and shall tarry abroad out of his tent 7 days. Okay, there's no distinction made here for men or ladies. You know, far as we can tell, if a lady had leprosy, same procedure. You know, it's bad enough. You know, most of us that have hair choose to keep it rather than shave it completely down. Okay? Sometimes God makes that decision for certain ones. But men or ladies had to shave their hair. Why? They were to wash their body completely. They were to shave all their hair. You remember? Or maybe you don't. But in chapter 13, part of the things that they were to check for leprosy was the hair, right? It would have been in the middle of the sore, and if it had turned white, if it was this color, it was that color. And any remnant of anything that was possibly contaminated by the leprosy was to be gone. The body was to be washed. All the hairs to be shaved off. And so, completely washing away any connection with the leprosy. Notice verse 8, he shall tarry abroad out of his tent 7 days. Boy, this is exciting. And at the same time, it's still a little bit of torture. he's got 7 days. He's not allowed to go home. He's able to be in the camp, but he's not able to go sleep in his own bed just yet. Okay? And what I'm reminded of here with this and what follows is the process for the priests. When God told Moses it's time to set Aaron and his sons apart, he said, you take them, and they're to go to the tabernacle 7 days. 7 days, they're not to come out of that court. They're to be there for 7 days as a part of their consecration. Here, the leper, 7 days, is not allowed to go home. And then on the eighth day, there's sacrifices and some other processes, okay? But here, this is a part of consecration, not to the office of priest, but he's being set apart again to the Lord and being restored to the people of God and the service of God. The leper, anybody that was unclean was not allowed to bring a sacrifice. So for however long this leper's been outside the camp, he can't bring any sacrifices. His family could, but he couldn't. So, verse number 9. It shall be on the seventh day, catch this, he shall shave all his hair off his head, and his beard, and his eyebrows, even all his hair shall he shave off. Okay, hopefully the beard part doesn't apply to the ladies. But, if you've ever seen somebody that's been through chemotherapy treatments and hair falls out, well, if eyebrows fall out too, that really changes a person's appearance, doesn't it? I mean, it's a part of the procedure, and hopefully people are understanding. And Lord willing, that kind of stuff grows back. But I mean, it was all to go. Head, facial hair, eyebrows, it was all to be gone. And for a while there's still a reminder of what God's done for him and the cleansing and the restoration and all those things. Verse 10, on the eighth day, he shall take 2 he-lambs without blemish, 1 ewe lamb, 3/10 deal of fine flour, and mingle with oil and a log of oil. Okay? There's several sacrifices here that are to be offered. Okay? 2 he-lambs, 1 ewe lamb, oil and flour, right? 3/10 deal, we're talking about, in our terms, 2 or 3 or 4 5-pound bags of flour. You know, we're talking about a good amount, not just a cup or two, okay? He was to offer, there's 5 offerings. The sin offering, the trespass offering, the burnt offering, the meat offering. What's the other one? Peace offering. Okay? The peace offering was completely voluntary. So it was not required of the leper here. But all the other ones, he used to offer one of these for a trespass offering, one for a sin offering, one for a burnt offering. That's the three lambs, two he lambs and a ewe lamb. Trespass offering, sin offering, burnt offering, and then the flour is for the meat offering. He's to offer all the offerings, basically, as a part of the process of his restoration. Whether or not there was specific sin involved in the in his being a leper, he was to bring a sin offering and a trespass offering as part of the restoration. Remember, leprosy pictures the defilement of sin, the separation from God that sin brings. And in a picture, the blood sacrifices were necessary to restore him to the fellowship of God and of God's people. The sin offering emphasized the nature of sin and sin against God. The trespass offering had more of an emphasis on an offense against man and an act of sin. Okay? This trespass offering is just a little bit different. Verse number 12. He should take one of the he lamb, an offering for a trespass offering, and the log of oil. All right, that's different. Trespass offering didn't usually have oil. And wave them for a wave offering before the Lord. That's a little different. The typical trespass offering didn't involve waving part of it. And slay the lamb in place where he shall kill the sin offering. Verse 14, the priest shall take some of the blood of the trespass offering and put it on the tip. Okay? So there's a little bit different. In the other trespass offering, the animal was to be of a certain value, according to the priest's valuation. The waving was not typical. The oil was not typical. Edersheim, in talking about the temple, quotes from some of the rabbi's writings in describing the process that came to be later on. But he said, here the priest was to take some of the blood of the trespass offering. Edersheim says that in later times there would have been two priests with two bowls or two buckets. You know, one was one bucket, they took that blood and they put it around the altar like they were supposed to do for the trespass offering. The other one caught the blood that was to be used in the leper's cleansing. Okay? Now, this is not necessarily what God commanded. At least it's not written here. This is what they decided to do. But later on, he would stand right at the gate of the tabernacle or the temple. And if we let this first row here picture the gate, and this would be the entrance. Okay? He has not fully been cleansed yet, so he's not allowed to step into the courtyard where all the other Jews were allowed to be. Okay? So he would stand here. They would kill the trespass offering. The priest would catch the blood, and then they were to take the blood and put it on the tip of his right ear, his right thumb, and the right toe of his big foot. Now, this is what later on came to be. Since he was not allowed to enter, this is what he would do. He would stick his head inside like this, and the priest would put the blood on the tip of his ear. I mean, we're talking about letter of the law, right? Then he would, you know, he would stick his hand in like this, and the priest would put the blood on his thumb. Then he'd stick his foot in like this, and they'd put the blood on his toe, but he's not allowed to come inside. I mean, part of him's inside. Anyway, whatever. But that's the way they got so regulated, the way they did it. But nonetheless, does this remind you of anything else we talked about? The priests, when they were consecrated, the blood of the sacrifice there was put on the tip of their ear, put on their right thumb, and the big toe of their right foot. What's the picture? Head to toe, it all belongs to God. It's all to be used in God's service. Okay? After the blood, then the priest was to take oil. That log of oil, log is not, you know, a stick of wood like we would think of it. It was a liquid measure, you know, maybe around a quart or, you know, a portion of a quart, a pint and a half. But it was a liquid measure. So he was to take some of that oil, pour it in his hand. And it says, sprinkle before the Lord. That was different from the priest's consecration, okay? But before the Lord, where was the Lord's presence in that time? What place specifically signified the Lord's presence? The Holy of Holies, the Ark of the Covenant, the mercy seat, okay? So the priest standing there was to take that oil and sprinkle seven times before the Lord or in the direction of the Holy of Holies, okay? Then he was to take that oil and put it right on top of the blood, same spot, oil on the ear, the thumb, and the foot. So the blood symbolizing the forgiveness is head to toe and everything in between. Okay? And then the oil symbolizing consecration, set apart for God's service, head to toe. He's restored. He's consecrated to the Lord's service. But all of that was to be done with the trespass offering. The verse 18, the remnant of the oil that's in the priest's hand, he said, take it, pour it in. It says specifically, he said, pour it in his left hand. Sprinkle it, you know, dip it and put it on his ear, hand, and toe. And then he's to take the rest of that and pour it on his head. Same thing that happened with the priests when they were consecrated. That oil of consecration, that anointing oil was poured on their head. All right? And all of this is part of this process of cleansing. Do you see the picture here? The picture is as he has been separated from God's and from God's people, he's been restored with a blood sacrifice, and the oil pictures that he is setting himself apart again, or dedicating himself, if you want to say it that way, back to God, to the service of God. And verse number 19, the priest shall offer the sin offering and make an atonement for him that is to be cleansed from his uncleanness. The trespass offering, again, emphasized the man's an act against God, but this was a special one. He had to offer a trespass offering and a sin offering, covering all aspects of a sin nature and sin in general and offenses against God and man. And whether or not he had gotten leprosy as a result of sin, it's been a long time since he's been able to offer a trespass offering, and he has sinned in that time. He was a sinner. So he used to offer the sin offering. And then verse number 20, and the priest shall offer the burnt offering and the meat offering upon the altar. The meat offering was the flour, meal, meat. And remember, certain handfuls were thrown on the fire and to burn with the sacrifice. The priest that declared him clean was the one that would offer these sacrifices, and then that priest is the one that would get the priest's portion of the meat. Okay? So, that's how all of this would go together. Now notice here, into verse 20, the meat offering upon the altar, and the priest shall make atonement for him, and he shall be clean. Those are great words. Now, you may not care because it's a leper and something I've never heard of, something we don't have to do. But by application, just as this leper was declared to be clean, we, just as David, when David said, purge me with hyssop and I shall be clean, wash me and I shall be whiter than snow, we can go to God on God's terms and understand that when we have defiled ourselves with sin, even when it's our own fault and we know it, we can be clean. We can be restored to the fellowship with God. We can have, as David said, restore unto me the joy of thy salvation, uphold me with thy free spirit. We can have that available to us. I look at this and go, wow, that he can be clean. I can be clean. What a tremendous truth. And notice in verse 21, this applies to basically all of us in here, okay? And if he be poor, okay? If he be poor and cannot get so much, notice, he shall take one lamb for a trespass offering. Verse 22, two turtle doves or pigeons, they're for the sin offering and the burnt offering. And verse 21, one-tenth deal. If he's poor, God made allowance that he could bring less flour and turtle and birds for the sin offering and burnt offering, but the trespass offering was the same. Remember, there one offering for sin is what's acceptable to God. And that trespass offering was the same for everybody, rich or poor. Just as a person that goes to heaven, it's the same offering before God, the same process, rich or poor. But God made allowance if they're poor. When you think about a poor person, to obtain three lambs would be a big enough price. Three lambs to be killed and you've got nothing to show for it in a human sense. I mean, you can't raise them for wool or for meat or for breeding. You can't do any of that. That was a pretty steep price for a poor person. But they regardless were to come up with a lamb and the oil for the trespass offering. And then they could have a bird for the sin offering, a bird for the burnt offering. And then the same process, it repeats basically all the same instructions again, how they were to have the blood applied, ear, thumb, toe, the oil, the same process, and the birds were to be offered instead of the lambs. But God does not discriminate in the sense that, well, he favors rich people over poor people in allowing them to come to him. There's one way of salvation. There was one offering for sin. But God made allowance for the poor folks to have the opportunity to be reconciled and to serve him again. Verse, let me see here, I didn't write it down. Verse 31, even as he's able to get one for a sin offering, other for a burnt offering with a meat offering, the priest shall make atonement for him that is to be cleansed before the Lord. This is the law of him in whom the plague of leprosy, whose hand is not able to get that which pertaineth to his cleansing. All right, after all of this is done, then guess what? Now he's completely free. Now he can go home. Now he can sleep in his own bed. Now he can be reunited with his family. He has been cleansed. He's been declared completely clean. Now, I don't know how frequently the kids saw him, but you can imagine how kids would respond. Let's just say it's Dad, all right? And Dad comes home. His head shaved completely bald. His eyebrows are shaved off. Those men all wore beards as a part of their culture, okay? His beard shaved off. His mustache is shaved off. His eyebrows are shaved off. His head shaved off. You know one of those kids is going to say, Daddy, you look funny. You know, that kids are just going to say stuff like that. But at the same time, they didn't care. Guess what? Dad's home. He can hug his kids now. He hasn't been allowed to hug his kids because then they're defiled and the possibility of them getting the disease and all of those things. But now he's restored to his family. He's restored to the people of God. He's restored to the worship of God. The leper was separated. He wasn't allowed to bring sacrifices, bring offerings. And now he knew what it was like to be separated from everybody. Now he knows the joys of being restored to fellowship. It's a great picture of sin and of salvation and of cleansing, is it not? We understand that sin separates us from God. And sin separates us from fellowship, even as children of God. But we can also know the joy that comes from restoration. Boy, well, I can be cleansed and I can have that fellowship with God restored and I can enjoy the blessings of God and God's people. It's all pictured for us here. That's why I say what we're looking at today in the cleansing of the leper. Restoration is possible. It's a great lesson for us, and it's a great lesson for us to share. Well, there are people that are tremendously discouraged. They think there's no hope. And it's an opportunity for us to say, hey, guess what? You can be reconciled to God. You can have that burden of guilt removed. You can have fellowship with God. You can have purpose in life. And it's pictured for us, even in what we would think of as a nasty thing, a disease. Cleansing, restoration is possible. Lord, thank you. Thank you that you came to us without the camp so that we might be clean.